I'm delighted to be here with you in this freezing cold room to welcome winter in Boston. Condolences to those of you who left your coats with your luggage, wherever it may be. But we'll try to keep this lively so you can warm up. So I'm going to give you the view from Massachusetts on health exchanges. As most of you probably know, in 2006, Massachusetts passed the most ambitious attempt by any state to expand health coverage. And as part of that, we created the first health insurance exchange in the nation. So we're a few years further ahead than other states. And our exchange has been both a very central feature of the architecture of our law, but also very central to its success. And so what I thought I would do with you is tell you just a little bit about our exchange here and then share with you a few lessons that we've learned. I start with this slide, which is mostly to show you evidence that despite the amnesia that occurred on the presidential campaign trail, Governor Romney actually did sign our law in 2006. It's actually interesting. One of the things that happens for governors in Massachusetts after they leave office is that they get their portraits painted and hung on the walls in the state house. And Governor Romney's portrait is unique in two respects. One is that on the table behind him, he has a picture of his wife, Anne. So he's the first governor to ever include that, which I think is very nice. The only other thing that is in the picture besides the two of them on the table is a copy of our law, which is very interesting. I whenever I go into the governor's office, I think I look to see if it's been painted over in some act of vandalism, but so far it hasn't been. So let's just go down. Oh, Jennifer, how does this go forward? Oh, that one. Okay. Yep. I'm the faculty member at my school who's the beta tester for any new technology, and they figure out if I can do it, then anyone can. So so this is my disclosure. As Jeff said, I'm the consumer representative on the board of our exchange, and it has many rewards, but financial ones are not among them. So there you go. So the first lesson I'd like to say is, despite all of the tumult and controversy going on around the implementation of the ACA, it's very important to keep our eyes on the prize. So this shows you what has happened in Massachusetts since our law passed. So we started with a relatively low rate of uninsurance of about 8%. We now have by far the lowest rate in the country at about 3%. And so this is why we're doing this, and this is important. And the federal law was very much created on a chassis of Massachusetts, the same basic components in the law. So I think our experience would suggest that once we get past these difficult startup things, that the ACA will have a significant effect on reducing the rate of uninsurance. The second thing I would say to you is that we need to be patient. Our experience here was that the full impact of our law in terms of reducing the rate of insurance to about 2 or 3% here did not happen for 2 years. So in the first year of reform, moving from 2006 to 2007, our rate of uninsurance went down from about 8% to about 6.5%. It fell another percent in the next year. So we need to be patient. This is going to take a while in every state to play out. The next thing I want to say is, and this I think has not gotten enough attention in some of the focus on Massachusetts, one of the great successes we've had here, which will be mirrored in the implementation of the ACA, is our law has made a significant difference in reducing the racial coverage gap in our state. As you can see here, we started with, you know, around the same disturbing disparities with much higher rates of uninsurance among African Americans and Latinos. We have completely closed that coverage gap between whites and blacks in our state, and we've made a significant reduction in the coverage gap between whites and Latinos. So we view this law here as one of the most successful interventions to try to reduce racial and ethnic disparities, and the ACA will be able to do this same thing nationally. So our exchange has been a significant factor in these coverage gains. About half of the newly insured people in Massachusetts have been covered through our exchange. I somehow can't get used to saying marketplace, so I'm going to be anachronistic and say exchange, but the marketplace. So most of the people in our state who've gotten newly insured little over 40% of them through Medicaid expansions, about another 40% of them getting subsidized coverage through our exchange, what will happen in the national law through the premium tax credit. So very important. This is just a little graphic to show you what our exchange looks like. So our exchange is called the Health Connector, and it was interesting in Jen's slide to see if several other states have picked up on this notion of connect or connector. I have to say, we got a very unfortunate confluence of factors, so we actually got some bad press early on. The week that our connector opened, there was a very tragic accident when the roof of the tunnel, which you all drove through probably on your way to the airport, collapsed, and that tunnel was called the connector. So the papers were full of collapse of connector, other things, which I guess says that you certainly will all be able to get through this. So our exchange sells to three different groups of people. So we sell subsidized coverage to individuals, we sell unsubsidized coverage to individuals, and when we also are the first exchange that's going to have some experience with the small employer market. We have 10 different insurers that participate. Six of them, the ones with pink lines, offer subsidized coverage, and the other 10 are available to small groups and individuals. Our market is very competitive. This is very much business which insurers want to get. Every major insurer in our state participates, and since our exchange opened, we've actually had two entirely new entrants come into our market. Including that Minuteman Health down in the bottom right-hand corner as you look at it. It's a new consumer cooperative that was set up here, so it's going to be very interesting for us to see how that goes. So let me tell you sort of six lessons that I would say that we've learned here. The first, and I think this is particularly important here, health reform is not a website. Websites are necessary. But they do not ensure that people enroll. And one of the things that we've learned here, actually, we didn't even have a website in Massachusetts for the first 15 months after our law went into effect. Now, obviously, that's different. Most people don't just go to a website. Most people need education, as Jennifer talked about. They need outreach. So outreach is really important to this, which is one of the reasons why the national law puts so much attention and resources into that. People need someone they trust to tell them about the law, to tell them why it's a good thing, to help them enroll, to help them find the website. And this requires really a community effort. We've had, in our political context 7 years ago, it was very, very different, but we had an extraordinary community effort with outreach by businesses, by providers, by health plans, by consumer groups, by community-based organizations, and this just shows you some of them. You could not go into a drugstore, a grocery store, shopping anywhere without getting something about health reform. One of our most important partners here was the Boston Red Sox. Extremely helpful that they won the World Series in 2007 when our law. We are deeply grateful to them for having just repeated that. During the time period when this goes, but it really does take a community, and one of the things we learned is there are opportunities for outreach everywhere, just absolutely everywhere. So every one of us can be a kind of crusader. My daughter actually won't go into any public place with me anymore because I will ask every taxi driver, every person in a hotel. I got kicked out of Trader Joe's last week when I was asking some workers there about their loss of health insurance. So this is very important. The second lesson is we really need to manage expectations about this rollout. We've been doing this for 7 years here. We still actually have a lot of uninsured people. This shows you some data from our tax filings. So because we've had this law for 7 years, when we file taxes, we have to indicate whether we have insurance or not as the way to enforce the individual mandate. What this shows you is all the people who were uninsured in 2010. This is the most recent year for which we have data, so about 170,000 people uninsured for the full year. So about 14% of them paid the penalty. So these are people that had something available that was affordable to them, but they chose to pay the penalty instead. So what this says is most people, even though the penalty is lower, are not choosing to pay the penalty and going uninsured. We still have 16% of people for whom there's nothing affordable in our state. These are generally older people. They're not eligible for subsidies, but because insurance is age-rated, it's They're just above the subsidy level. We've not had a surge of religiosity in Massachusetts. Most people are not, we thought, well, because some people could claim that for religious reasons, we didn't know what would happen there. That hasn't happened. The thing that's striking about our experience is two-thirds of the people who are uninsured are very low-income people. Under our state subsidy construction, so these are people with incomes below 150% of the poverty level, about $16,000 for an individual, almost all of these people are eligible for free health insurance, either through the Medicaid program or through free insurance through the exchange, and yet we haven't yet gotten them to enroll. So we're very excited about the implementation of the ACA because that's giving us another opportunity to go out and really try to find people. But what it also suggests is even after years and years of effort, we still haven't reached everyone. One group...
I'm in that group.
You are? Okay, well... You are insured?
Yeah.
Oh, good. So great, good. Well, wonderful. And I think, actually, you can walk around Massachusetts if you're obnoxious like I am. You can find many, 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 many other people. Just don't go with my daughter. So we've heard a lot about how difficult it is to get young people to buy health insurance, and that's, you know, certainly was a challenge that we've had here. I got to sit behind the mirror at a lot of focus groups that we did of young uninsured men when this law first passed. And I'm a public health person. I think all we have to do, tell them the benefits of health insurance. It's good for you. It's good for the community. Please sign up. And then I listened to 75 young guys talk about why they weren't insured. And what we discovered was every single one of them knew that there was a law. Every single one of them knew there was an individual mandate. Every single one of them knew how much insurance cost. Every single one of them knew what the penalty was. They had all done the math, and they had decided to stay uninsured. And then we tested some messages about what would it take you to buy insurance. And we heard several things that I think can be helpful in the national conversation. The first thing we said, and this made my heart sing, they cared what their mothers thought. I have a 15-year-old that's not always apparent to me, but so we did a lot of outreach and enrollment things focused on kind of mothers and grandmothers. We had a Do It For Your Mother campaign, and girlfriends can be very helpful too. And the second thing we heard, which was surprising, they really cared about preventive care, and they didn't realize that the new policies that were available to them actually had preventive care, so that was a helpful message. The third is they cared that the penalties were going to go up. They thought that our initial penalty, which was quite low. And then the fourth thing we heard is they had absolutely no idea how much it would cost if they got sick. So we started on every ad putting in information, did you know if you broke your arm it would cost this much? If you had appendicitis it would cost that much. Those were very effective. And actually our biggest coverage gains here have been among young adults. So the box on the right shows you we started with almost a quarter of young adults uninsured in the state. Now it's about 6%. So still a ways to go, but a dramatic reduction. So my answer to will young people buy insurance, they will, if you make it affordable, and if you find messages that resonate with them about why they should care about this. A third message, and Jen talked about this, we've had a real struggle with getting people continuously insured as their income changes. So under the ACA, some people will be eligible for Medicaid. When their income is higher, some will be eligible for the subsidies through the exchanges. About 40% of people at low incomes in any given year, their income changes enough to move them back and forth between those. So connecting the exchanges and Medicaid is very, very important, which is why some of the things that Jen talked about are very, very important. In particular, it's been very hard under our law to keep people insured as they move from Medicaid to the exchange. So we're very excited about some of the changes being implemented. Thanks, Elena. We've been singularly unsuccessful getting people to sign up, to get small employers to sign up. So this is a piece of the law that's not going to go into effect in most states for a few years, but we'll be happy to talk about some of the challenges there. If exchanges are going to have the kind of purchasing power that they could have, finding ways to get employers interested in this and getting small employers, that market is much bigger than individuals. And then the Fifth lesson is public health has been an extremely important partner in helping to document the measures that happen as a result of improving coverage. So we've had really significant increases in things like preventive screening visits, colonoscopies. Our smoking rate declined really dramatically, we think, because of smoking cessation benefits. So public health has a very important role to play here. And then finally, although we've made a lot of progress on coverage, costs have remained a huge issue. And I fear that this is going to happen a little bit on the national level because of some of the large deductibles and things. So we need to keep an eye on that. And public health will need to be a critical partner in doing that health reform 2.0 work of trying to reduce costs. So anyway, I'll end there and look forward to talking more about ways in which public health can potentially partner with exchanges as well. So, okay. So.